So we're on Daf Yud Zayin, and we're up to Tana Rabbana. This Raisa is going to address a very interesting question. What do we do in a collision, sort of a clash between X and Y, and we're going to see that the X and the Y changes without the Suya. I find this fascinating because, in my mind, the breath of life of Shas is all about these kinds of priority situations, you know, when you're faced with two great ideals and you have to decide which comes first. And in the case that we're going to deal with now, it's the Simcha of the Kala versus the Avelus and the Kavod for the Mess. Right. And what you have is that on the one hand, in the case of the Kala, we have a whole procedure, a whole procession of bringing the Kala from her father's house to the Chuppah, and we escort her in great numbers. On the other hand, we have the case of Levaya Sames, where we escort the body of the mess to be buried. And, you know, emotionally one might say, well, the mess is being buried now for eternity, so to speak. This really should be the ultimate in Kavada mess, that we should put that on top. And again, she's getting married. It's a great occasion, nobody's denying that, but it seems to pale compared to, you know, the burial of the dead. But the Gemara says just the opposite. Tana Rabbanan Mavirin Es HaMes Milifnei HaKala, that when we have a choice of who has to give way to whom, it's the mess that has to sort of give way to the Kala. And what that means is that if there's masses of people and they can't both enter into the same road, then what we're going to do is we're going to temporarily hold up the funeral procession for the sake of Hotzos HaKala V'Beis Avia, to be Malav the Kala to the Chuppah. Even though it means that we're going to have to delay the Kvura of the Mess. And why is that? Why am I Mavirim Es HaMess? You know, we'll have to send the mess and the whole gathering around the deceased in a succourteous use, round, you know, going around the other way. And the answer is because we have a rule in halacha that Kvod HaChaim is greater than Kvod HaMess, trumps Kvod HaMess. So we'll take this, you know, we'll take the mess and we're going to send them on a different path, a different road, circuitous. No, I'm not pronouncing it right. Circuitous. Maybe it's better that way. Yeah. All for the sake of the Kala. This is her great day. And once again, I would quote this as another raya to what we've been insisting on, that the mitzvah is kvod hakala, or simchas hakala. It's not simchas hakosa. You know, the Meiri quotes a day that no, anything we do for the Kala, it's only really for the sake of the Chosin. I don't think that that's necessarily so. It's called Milifnei HaKala. So we have Keita Meragna Lifnei HaKala, now we have Mavirnes HaMes Lifnei HaKala.
What's the explanation there?
Because the Kala is no less significant than the Chosin. And I'm not saying that she's more significant.
No, it sounds like it's more significant. In other words, my gut reaction to that is, and I think it's true to some degree, that the bride is more sensitive about her wedding day than the groom. In other words, there's something about a woman on her wedding day that's...
Yeah, that's probably true.
Psychologically,
yeah, that's true today. In other words, how she... And I think that goes back even the Kate of Iraq and how she looks on that day, how it's like the day of her life, and it's still true today. Like,
and she becomes the...
And she becomes the center.
The center, right, the epicenter.
In terms of her joy and her celebration. But you're right, it is interesting that the Gemara doesn't just say Chassan and Kala on these issues, it keeps going to the Kala.
Particularly people like, you know, look at the pretty bride, and yeah, feels also
good. No, but the bride is feeling that on that day. She's, that's the day she's waited for.
Right. Just that to give also a halachic twist, some poskim hold that the chuppah, which clinches nisuin, is not the klonsos, as we call them, you know, that make it into a, you know, sort of like a temporary house or so, but rather the hotzas hakala mibeis avia, bringing the kala from the father's house to the chasan, that itself is the chuppah. For example, the Gemara says, we had it earlier in the first parak, that in Golil, the Arus during the Erusin period was allowed to go into the Beis Avia, into the house of her father, and be alone with her in that house. And that was a radical change in the whole structure of Erusin, because Erusin means Beis Avia. That's where she is. As soon as you take her out of the Beis Avia, she becomes a Nesuah. So here when we're talking about Hotzos Ha'isha, Mi Beis Avia, the Beis Achasana, according to some, that itself is chuppah. Vizeh. Now we have a third problem. Our first two problems were, what's greater? Should we put the focus on the kala? Should we put the focus on the hotzos hames? Now we have another focus, and that's covered for the melech. Vizeh, melefnei melech b'Yisrael. Because with regard to melech b'Yisrael, there's also halacha that we have to escort the king with great pomp and ceremony. That's part of kovod. It says som tasim alecha melech, meaning that you have to have an aim of a yira, a reverence for the king. The king represents the entire nation, and we're hoping that the kings that are now coming to power in our time should be even greater than the ones that preceded them, which just doesn't take much, but in any event. So that's called mifnei melech b'Yisrael. However, now the Braisa tells us a story about Agrippas HaMelech. And in a sense, Agrippas HaMelech, at the face of it, is violating the law. Albeit his motives are altruistic and very respectable, but it's against the law. He's the king, and therefore his covet comes as primary, and it overpowers the covet of the kala, it overpowers the covet of the mess. The mess has to wait or take a circuitous path, and the kala likewise, but the king has to go forward, you know, the main road. But here, what happens? Amru alav al Agrippas HaMelech, they tell us about Agrippas of our milifnei akala, that instead he took the route around instead of and vacated the middle path, you know, the main highway, the byway, for the sake of the kala. Right, and it's a great act of modesty on his behalf, but
he's
not allowed to do that. And yet, Shibchu Chachamim. The Chachamim were very impressed with him. So the Gemara says, Shibchu Hu Michlal de Shapir of it. It would seem that if they praised it, it must be that they actually advocated in his favor. So the Gemara asks, V'homo, Ravashi afilu man di omer nasi shemocha al kvodo kvodo mocho. We have a question about the status of a nasi, whether it's equal to that of a king or not. If it is, then he's not allowed to be mochel on his kovod. If it's not, then he could be mochel on his kovod. But melech, shemochel kvodo, ein kvodo mochel. There's no question, no doubt about it, that when it comes to a king, then he's not mochel on his kovod. And basically what we're saying is that the kovod of a melech is not just his personal kovod. If it was his personal kovod, then he can be mochel, but he represents the entire nation, and that's not his. You know, that bailus, that ownership, he doesn't have. The Omar Mar, Som Tasim Alecha Melech, Shetehei Emaso Alecha. That we have to accept the awe and the reverence for the king, and the melech is not allowed to be mochel. So how is it that Agrippas did this violation, and yet the Chachamim were meshaveach him? So there's a Tosfos Divrei Maaseh Parshas, which I want to discuss with you. But first, let's read the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer is Parshas Drachim Havim. That when when the king, when Agrippa did what he did, it was at a parashas drach, it was at a point in which there were two roads that met together, and he made it seem that he sort of concealed what he was doing. He made it seem as if he was really going down that path anyway. So Tosfos says, I don't understand. The Gemara has a question in Masechtas Sota, and the Gemara gives an answer. The question is very similar to our question, but yet the Gemara gives an answer there in Sota and doesn't give the same identical answer here in Masechtas Ksuvos. What happened over there in Sota? The Gemara tells us that when the king would read from the Sefer Torah, which he did once every 7 years at the mitzvah of Hakel, then he was allowed to sit because of his kavod. It's not such a kavod if he has to stand in front of the entire tzibur. But yet, the Gemara says that he can read me'umad. He can stand in deference, in kavod, for the entire tzibur. So the Gemara asks, how could he do such a thing? Because mel shemachal kvodo im kvodo machol. So the Gemara answers, mitzvah shiny. That since he's standing for the sake of a mitzvah, that does not undermine his kavod. So Tosfos says, hacha, why couldn't we give the same answer here, that the reason why the melech turned aside and he gave way for the kala is for the mitzvah of simchas hakala and mitzvah shiny?
In the act of...
You want to give an answer?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you saw Tosfos answer that. Okay, now I want to hear. If you haven't seen Tosfos yet, then I'm excited.
The hakira, in other words, there it's in the act. There's a chiyuv to stand for Kriyas HaTorah. In other words, that's where it's appropriate, where you can be mochel, so to speak, on the kavod. But here, it's not the act itself of the mitzvah.
So again, let me try to help understand what you're saying.
In other words, the distinction is the case of standing for Kriyas HaTorah is that there's a chiyuv to stand for Kriyas HaTorah.
There's a mitzvah to
stand for the mitzvah itself requires standing.
Isn't that because standing is an act of kavod for the Torah?
Is it kavod? I mean, it says it's based on a pasuk. It says it's the Gemara Megillah that
Amodi Madi. Right.
So you could interpret that any way you like, but that doesn't sound like just a kavod issue per se. I mean, there's a chiyuv. In other words, it's. Actually, I just saw Rav Avi Ner has a tshuva in terms of somebody in a wheelchair if they're allowed to have an aliyah to Torah. And he says most poskim say that you're not allowed to call somebody in a wheelchair to the Torah.
Okay, so let's say like this. Standing for Kriyas HaTorah is a mitzvah.
Right, let's call it a chiyuv in the mitzvah.
The mice itself is inherently a mitzvah.
Requires standing.
But here you would not say that taking another path.
Taking a path is not within the...
That's not a mitzvah problem. That's
not within the mitzvah.
You couldn't make a brach on that. Is that what you're saying? Because right. It's not a mitzvah.
Yeah, okay, we could put it that way.
I'm just wondering if maybe we could embellish it a little bit further. I mean, I like what you're saying. And I'm being Mosif now. Sometimes it's called a Mosif Korea, you know. But I would say the following.
Is that what Tosfos answers? No.
Oh, I don't know what Tosfos answers, okay? But I would say the following, that the act of standing, insofar as it's a mitzvah act, is not a zilzul b'kavod. Meaning, when the king stands, that doesn't indicate a lack of kavod for the king. On the contrary, he's giving kavod for the Torah.
Right. You're putting it a little differently than I did, but I understand what you're saying also.
But here, in the case of the melech and the kala, the act itself is a zilzul b'kvod.
Right.
And even though through that zilzul he gets a kiyum of kvod hakala, but the mitzvah dimension is not powerful enough to undermine the status of zilzul b'kvod. So when does Gemara apply the halacha of mitzvah shiny, and therefore the melech could be mochel on his kavod? That's when the mitzvah element has the power to undermine the zilzul. So it's not a stira to this, to the, you know, you don't have to say that the entire community was insulted by the fact that the king stood. The king stood because of a greater covet, and that's the covet for the Shechina, the covet for the Torah, the Nosen HaTorah. That's not a zilz. That's where mitzvah changes the entire nature of the act, that inherently it would have been, it would have qualified as an act of zilzul b'kvod, it would have been antithetical to som tasim alecha melech, and it changes and transforms the nature of the act. It's no longer an act of zilzul. Masha Enkein, when he, the king, gives way for the kala, and he goes down another road, that itself is an act of zilzul. It could be that in the broader sense, it's a kiyum mitzvah, that I don't deny. But I can't undermine the status of the act as an act of zilzul. You know, the melech is kowtowing, so to speak, bowing to the kala. He's doing it for a greater good of the mitzvah, but he's still being mezalzel in his covet. What's the language of Tosus? Tosus says, "Shiny." I'm sorry. The Gemara says that Hasam. Tosus says Hasam mitzvah hu sheyesh lemelech lachlok kovid l'torah. What's the next word? Hachashuva mimenu. Aval hacha leka mitzvah.
Sounds like what I said, or what we both said.
It's definitely not what I said.
No.
Because see from the last line, he says hacha leka mitzvah.
In other words,
the act. What he's trying to be mafkia is the mitzvah element here. There's no mitzvah here.
Right.
On behalf of Kvod HaKala, why? He says, "Dichvodo adif mi Kvod HaKala." Since his covet supersedes that of the Kala, therefore, it's not even a kiyum of Kvod HaKala. You know, Tosus is being very stingy. He's not even giving way to the melech to allow him through this act to achieve a kiyum mitzvah. In the case of Amida for Sefer Torah, because the covet of the Torah is even greater than the covet for a melech, there you cannot deny that he's obtaining a kiyum, and therefore if he's obtaining a kiyum by being mechabed the Torah, that's called mitzvah shiny. But mitzvah shiny is not going to help me in this case, because he doesn't even achieve a kiyum of mitzvah Tosus, because since his covet is greater than her covet, therefore Tosus says it's like a mitzvah. It's not even a mitzvah.
Could I say it a little differently? In other words, just to go back to what I said, that standing for the Sefer Torah is the appropriate way to be mechayim the mitzvah. In other words, the melech doesn't have a choice in that matter. Could we say that?
Well, again, you know, you're getting into this whole problem of, you know, what do we do when two mitzvahs clash? You know, I don't know which mitzvah.
Saying, I see what you're saying. You're still left with that issue.
Right.
It could be in this case the halacha.
No, you're right that he should. Right, exactly. He should be standing to say the Torah on the normal.
Says but that the melech doesn't stand. Even though generally that's a chiyah, but the other wins out. Right.
Right.
And we say that's not the case because.
But Tosus's agenda here is to say that in the Gemara's Kasha, there's no mitzvah element here at all, because since the covet of the melech takes priority over the covet of the kala, moving away for the kala is not even a covet. It's not even a mitzvah. It's almost like a mitzvah above avera kind of thing.
How does Tosus know that the melech has to give kavod to the Torah? Knows that the Torah says that you are to give the ultimate kavod to the melech. Maybe that's what...
No, well, Tosus is saying that when you set up a system of priorities, what you're doing is you're asking which chiyuv kavod is greater. And Tosus says on the Richter scale, you have the following. You have kvod hakala on the bottom. You could even go even further. You could say kvod hames is all the way at the bottom. Then you go up one notch as you climb the ladder to kvod hakala. From kvod hakala, you go up another notch to kvod hamelech. And then the ultimate covet, which is greater than everything, is kvod hatorah. I think I once heard from the Rav Zichron Livracha that the source of all covet and all kedusha is one and the same. It's the Torah itself. So that's sort of like the ultimate. So in that sense, when the Gemara says mitzvah shining, it means that for the sake of a mitzvah, Like, I'll give you another example. There's a mitzvah of kibud av v'em. It's a great mitzvah. I mean, kibud av v'em is not, but it doesn't pale. It doesn't Shabbos. Compare to kavod ha-mitzvah.
Right, if you're,
so therefore, if your parents tell you to violate the mitzvah, you have to give up on their kavod for the sake of kavod ha-mitzvah.
Right.
And the Gemara's language is very interesting in Kiddushin. The Gemara says, ki atav ve'avicha chayov be'kavod ha-mokam.
Right.
You know, you want to give kavod to your father, but your father himself has to give kavod to the makam.
Right. That's confusing only in the sense that if the makam is the one that's being mechayev to do certain things, so maybe that feels.
Maybe Akash Baruch Hu is Michael M's kavod. Is that what you mean? If he's obligating me to
if
give
he's
kavod.
Obligating you to do certain things, right. So maybe that.
Maybe he's setting aside his own kavod.
Right, right. That's, I'm saying that's right. Where it gets confusing. If he's commanding you to do that, so
right, but he's not commanding you to do it in a situation of a mitzvah.
Right.
Now we have two independent commands. He's telling you have to be mechabed the melech, correct? And the melech has to do everything in his. Actually, kavod ha-melech actually takes on two dimensions. One dimension is the obligation that we have vis-a-vis the melech.
Right.
There's another obligation of the melech vis-a-vis himself. Meaning he has to be shomer on his kavod, and therefore he's not allowed to be mochel on his kavod. Now the Torah itself is mitzaveh both us to be mechabed the melech and the melech to be mechabed himself. But what happens when there's a collision? Shall we call it a coincidence of priorities? Because there's also a mitzvah to do, and that mitzvah requires the melech's kavod to step aside. So what should we do in that case? There's a head-on collision here. We can't have our cake and eat it. Either we say, give kavod to the mitzvah and leave the melech out of it, you know, forget about the kavod malchus, and therefore the melech has to stand. Or shall we say, no, the melech has to have his kavod, and therefore he's not allowed to stand. And in that case, Tosus says that the greatest priority is to the mitzvah. And in the language of Tosus calls that, he says, Yesh la melech lach lo kavod. So the melech himself is caught in a bind. He has to be shomer on his kavod and observe his kavod. He can't stand. On the other hand, he has to give kavod to Hashem, in this case to the Torah. How does he work this out? And the answer is that the kavod that he has to give to the malchus is less intense than the kavod that he has to give to HaKadosh Baruch. All right, let's go on, Rabosa, because we're not finished with collisions here. We still have another priority issue, and that's Talmud Torah. Yeah, what do you say?
The king to reading of Taika and Target, what a big deal.
Yeah.
Farzan, I would just comment one other. It sounds a bit strange to say that that would be a bizayon to the melech that he's standing for Kriya Satorah.
Well, only because it's a mitzvah. As a result of the fact that it's a mitzvah, it's not a bizayon.
I'm saying the act itself doesn't.
You mean why is it so humiliating for?
It doesn't. Right, that's what I'm saying. Doesn't appear humiliating. In other words,
for
the king on the roadside to say, "I'm going
to
wait now for this whole
right." That's right, obviously
for an hour for this to go through.
Right.
That's right. But to say he's standing in front of the kahal, that he's standing at the Torah. I'm just saying that.
So I don't know. For that, I think we'd have to learn the sugyas in Sota exactly why Amida is a zilzal in his kavod. I don't know. But here, Rabosa, the next piece of Gemara is very exciting for me, and it's another collision. And you get invited to a wedding, and it means you have to cancel a shir, or you get you not invited. Nobody invites to a levaya, but you lost somebody that you know, and you have to really be mechavi them. So what do you do? Should you close the Gemara? Did I ever tell you this about Rabbi Kuperman Zichron Levracha? I mentioned last week. Sorry, I hate when I tell you the same story twice in a row. You know, they say after 12 months you can tell the story again. Nobody remembers it.
I'll remember.
Rav Kuperman was the head of the Michalai. He had a thousand students, maybe even more than that. Yeah. And no, I mean at the same time. But anyway, so he used to get invited to weddings, and he made it an absolute rule that he couldn't go to everybody's wedding because it meant that he would have to give up all his time and all his research, and he could never get a night seder in or whatever it is. And in learning, he was very creative, amazingly original in his specs. You know, he had his field.
Meshech Chachma.
His Meshech Chachma is a classic. You can't learn the Meshech Chachma without Rav Kuperman. It's not Shaya. It's like learning the Maral on Chumash without Rav Hartman, you know. Well, learning Mishnayos today without Kahati, you know what I'm saying? But in addition, I mean, this is, I think, his greatest contribution. It goes even beyond the Meshech Chachma. But he's written many Svarim, but it's his Pshuto Shel Mikra is an absolute must, you know. Anyone who's learning Tanakh, even in Machon Herzog, I think, in my humble opinion, should have to take Kupamim 1.1. You know, that's the introduction to Tanakh. I mean, he does a marvelous job on Pshuto Shel Mikra. He shows you how fascinating and how many facets there are to Pshuto Shel Mikra.
That's one. That's a sefer on. It's one sefer, or yeah,
it's. I think it's a two-volume set. But actually, it was. It went through many different Gilgulim. You know, originally, I don't think it was called Pshuto. Originally, I think it was called Lipshuto Shel Mikra. Then he rewrote it in a different format, and it's called Kiddushas Pshuto Shel Mikra, I think.
It's on Chumash or
on Chumash. As far as I remember, okay. It's on Chumash. Remind me after Shir, I'll show you one copy. I have, you know, one volume of it. And I never could thank my good buddy Rabbi Shurin, Yitzhak Shurin, enough for recommending that I get a hold of that sefer.
I am not familiar with
him. And he was very close to Rabbi Shurin's grandfather, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And a lot of what Rav Yaakov was machadish in his interpretations of Chumash is based on Pshuto Shel Mikra. What's the name of the sefer? He didn't write it himself. It's Talmidim.
Yaakov Kamenetsky.
Yeah. Titan Emesli Yaakov, maybe?
Yeah, it's Yaakov
Titan Emesli. Yeah, something like that. Toda Rabbanu. Mevatlim. Now, I'm going to rewrite the text for a minute, just for pedagogical reasons. I'm not an apikoros. But Mevatlin Hotzos Hames Vachnosas Hakala L'Talmud Torah. Meaning, if not for this brisa, the Havamina, what I would have said, I would have argued, is that forget about Otzos HaMes, forget about Hachnosas Kala, just simply talk about Talmud Torah. Why? Because Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. Talmud Torah is the greatest mitzvah of them all. So why should Talmud Torah give way for any other mitzvah? But in truth, the real Lomdusha question should be the exact opposite. I don't understand what this price is being mechadish to me. Even without this price, I would have no choice, but I'd be compelled to this position that Mevatlin Talmud Torah Lo Tzos HaMes Lachnos Kala, because the rule of thumb is that with regard to any other mitzvah, we apply the principle of Osik B'mitzvah, Potter Min HaMitzvah. So you picked up mitzvah A, and you're exempt from mitzvah B. According to the Ritva, you're not even allowed to do mitzvah B. You don't even have a choice. You must continue the mitzvah that you began. But the exception to the rule, there's only one mitzvah which is outside of the pale of Osek B'mitzvah, Potter B'mitzvah, and that's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. You cannot dedicate yourself to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah to the extent in which it undermines another mitzvah. So for example, if an ani comes to my door and he wants stuck, I don't have a right to say, well, I'm learning Torah now. And if guests come to my house and I have to receive these guests, I can't say, well, I'm learning Torah, don't bother me. There are people who maybe would say that, I don't know. But the din is that you have to be mevatel Talmud Torah, because Gadol Talmud Shemevili, they Maisa, the whole purpose of Torah is to do the Maisa.
You also have the Overes, which is another...
I didn't hear you?
A mitzvah Overes.
Mitzvah Overes.
In terms of that also...
Ah, well... I think what you're saying, Aaron, is that the exception to the rule, in one particular case, we might be able to allow you to continue learning if you could postpone the mitzvah at no loss to the mitzvah. If it's a mitzvah she'ein overis. Or alternatively, if it's a mitzvah she'ef shal asos al yidei achir. But you have to know all the rules. But those are exceptions. The general rule that we should really, you know, engrave in our brains and in our souls is that mevatlin Talmud Torah for any mitzvah. There's no din of osik b'mitzvah, potter mitzvah. You know, you can't cling to the Torah and its study and say, well, I'm potter min mitzvah. That would undermine the whole purpose of Talmud Torah.
How about the sugya of Kriyat Shema, where it sounds like in that sugya that the Talmud Torah overrides Kriyat Shema? And the question, that's the beginning of Perek Sheni and Brachos, where the question is asked, does he go back and recite it? And and it seems that Talmud Torah overrides.
So what if he's learning, he doesn't stop for Kriya? Is that what it says?
Yeah.
I know there's a Yerushalmi of that sort, but I didn't know it's in the Bavli too.
It's the beginning of Perek Sheni.
The beginning of Perek Sheni, I recall, is about...
That's the famous line. It says that what he's doing when he puts his hand over his head, he's saying the first line of the Shema. But even that...
Oh, you're talking about Rebbe, maybe.
Yeah.
But
that leaves you with Rebbe not saying the rest of the Shema. In other words, that the Talmud Torah...
So I can only tell you what I remember from the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, Hayshinu v'Hayshinu. That essentially, Kriya Shema is also Talmud Torah.
That's not how the sugya ends with...
You want to take out a lot of brachas here, and maybe you can... I'm just very fascinated by what you're saying, because
the Gemara even asked the question.
I never heard halacha lemaisa that somebody would give up on Kriya Shema for the sake of Talmud Torah.
I'm not saying it's halacha lemaisa, but the Gemara raises.
So that's why I wanted to see the Gemara, because it's
antithetical.
The Gemara brachas, because what you're saying is antithetical to.
I'll get it. Which one is it? The first or
first, yeah.
The second parak.
Shaming, but. No, because the Gemara even asked the question, does he go back and read it? Does he not? Is he only saying the first line of the Shema? But all of that seems to be suggesting that the Talmud Torah is overriding.
So again, the only answer I can give you, if there is such a Gemara, is because Kriya Shema itself is Talmud Torah.
That's not what the Gemara. I don't think.
So again, I don't know. But again, you can't. you can't undermine certain fundamentals. It's absolutely fundamental that you must fulfill the mitzvahs, and you can't hide behind.
No, but you could.
Min ha-mizbeach tikachen olamos. You can't hold on to Torah and just say that for the sake of Torah, I'm going to give up on mitzvahs. If the Torah says,
so they're Gemara.
What does it say? What's the beginning of the pasuk? V'shinanto l'vanecha. No, dibarta bam v'shavtcha v'kumecha. But what's the beginning of the pasuk? How does it start? Does it say v'dibarta bam or something? It's a little embarrassing. Oh, v'shinanto l'vanecha v'dibarta bam. Right? It says both. Okay, you're right and I'm right. We're both right. It's good. So he can't, hide behind Talmud Torah and endlessly push off this mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Now, if he's teaching Torah Barabim, like the case of Rebbe, so but that's a whole different story. That Talmud Torah de Rabim, you should know, is a separate category in Halacha. For example, the mitzvah of Hakel, which is Talmud Torah de Rabim, is counted in Taryag as a separate mitzvah. And the Gemara says that if a person is teaching Torah, he doesn't even have to stop for the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah if he's got Talmud Torah Derabim. Talmud Torah Derabim is a separate entity. But certainly if I'm alone and I'm studying a sugya in Ksuvis and it's time for Kriyat Shema, I have no...
Here, B'shan Shemavir Yad Elof HaMakav Alev HaMol Shemayim. So the Gemara has Chozer V'Gomra, Eino Chozer V'Gomra.
Bar but Gemara, again, this is not about Rebbe who is teaching the
Gemara answer is Eino Chozer V'Gomra.
Right, but isn't it a specific case? You're just talking about Stama Jew.
No.
Okay, look at the Gemara here. This is a little easy. Just follow the, follow the bar.
No, so maybe that's an answer, but...
No, I'm asking, what is the Gemara talking about? You can't quote a Gemara unless you know the case. Can you just... go back to the original case? So we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi.
Right.
Correct?
So Amar le Rav Chiya.
That's something else. Oh, no, because Rav Yehuda HaNasi, there are many shitas about what is the mitzvah of Kriya Shema.
So you're saying, in other words,
how many shitas are there? How many shitas are there? I both say there are four shitas in what the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is. One shita is that it's the first pasuk.
Right.
The other shita is that it's the first parsha. The third sheet is that it's the first pasuk and the first parsha and the second parsha. And there's a third sheet that even Vayomer is an essential part of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. That's the Rambam sheet. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi held that his mitzvah of Kriya Shema is only the first pasuk. Anything we add after that is only Durabbanan at best, whatever it is. Yeah. But again, I would insist. Again, Aaron, I'm not holding in the second parak of Kriya Shema, of Brachas, but I would insist that unless we go to the Yerushalmi, which is again a whole different approach to what the nature of Kriya Shema is, then I would insist as one of the fundamentals of the faith that you would have to stop Torah study for the sake of Kriyat Shema. Now exactly what the shear of Kriyat Shema is, whether it's one pasuk, whether it's one parsha, whether it's two parshas, whether it's three parshas, whatever it is, for sure you're going to have to stop your Talmud Torah for that. If it's Talmud Torah Derabim, that's already a different category. And if you're learning in the Yishalmi basically holds the Kriyat Shema is not a separate mitzvah, it's part of the general mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Hai Shinun v'hai Shinun. In fact, I think the Yishalmi might be here in the second Perek of Brachos. But we really went off on a tangent. Let's try to get back on the horse. So what happens here, Rabosai? You should give me a knee-jerk response without even thinking twice. You have a choice between the great mitzvah of Talmud Torah and the great mitzvah of Hachnosas Kala or Levayas Hames. What has to come first? No, you're not with me? Again, I'm gonna hock you till you get the right answer here. Talmud Torah is the only mitzvah where you've got to stop that mitzvah for the sake of another mitzvah. The principle of Osek B'mitzvah, Pot Mitzvah does not apply to Talmud Torah. So again, I ask you the question. The man is studying Torah, and now he has a mitzvah of Levayas Hames, or alternatively, a mitzvah of Hachnosas Kala. What should be a knee-jerk response without even thinking about it? Hachnosas Kala, Tzos Hames. So why do I need this Mishnah? I'm sorry, why do I need this Brian? So yeah, Brian, say it again.
This is teaching.
Okay, if it's Talmud Torah, the Rabbim, as I said, they might take on another category. That's a separate mitzvah, you know.
But we just said earlier, if it's a mitzvah that can be fulfilled by others, then you don't stop.
Oh, so now we have to know how many people have to show up at this Levaya. Is there an obligation for every single last Jew in the world? Like, you know, I don't know if anybody is familiar with a book by Dr. Seuss called Horton Hears a Who. I'm really indicating my great intelligence level in the literary field. I should get a PhD in English literature. But is it every single last Horton, you know, has to come to the Levaya, has to come to the... So the chiddush here that I want to share with you of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman... In Kovetz Shiurim, he says that the chiddush here is that im yesh imo kol tzarko ein mevatlin shahava mina afshi yesh imo kol tzarko mevatlin tam tum shim yesh beribui anoshim ribui mitzvus kamashmol she ein mevatlin tam Torah kevan she yesh lo kol tzarko. Unbelievable. He turns this whole brisa inside out, upside down. And if you're an agnostic here, you're going to fight against it because he's really, this is wild what he's saying. He's saying the chiddush is not that you mevatel Talmud Torah for Achnosas Kala and Otzos Hames, but that you're not mevatel Torah for Achnosas Kala and Otzos Hames. Why? Because there's a certain minimum number of people who have to participate in this entourage, and if that minimum number that quota has been reached, then you have to continue learning.
But how would you know?
How would you know? You've got to be on your cell phone. You have to have somebody there at the wedding who's going to call you up and say, Rabbi Berzon, we have 600,000 Jews there. You know, that's enough.
No room.
Right.
No business communities.
Right. So again, the whole sugi that we're about to embark upon is, what is that magic number? You know, how many people have to be there in order to achieve kol tzarko? But says Rabbi Chanan, the chiddush of Abrai says, yeah, you'll mevatel Talmud Torah because they need you. But if they don't need you, even though your presence would enhance the kovid or the simcha, nevertheless, Talmud Torah comes first. So it comes out like this. With regard to Achnosas Kala and Hotzos Hames, there are two levels. One level is the absolute full brunt chiyuv, and that makes it into a mitzvah like any other mitzvah, which means it undermines Talmud Torah. Then there's another fallback position, which is not on the same level. It's what we call a kiyum mitzvah without a chiyuv mitzvah. And the difference is that as long as we haven't reached that quota, the amount of people that have to come has not shown up, then you're in the Ikar Mitzvah. You have an absolute chiyuv to show up and be part of that quota, to fulfill that quota. However, once they've reached that quota, now your participation would enhance the mitzvah. We always want more people. But that's only a chiyuv mitzvah. That's not the full-fledged chiyuv mitzvah. The nafkamina, says Rav Chanan, is this issue of Talmud Torah. We're not going to allow you to be mevatel Talmud Torah unless you have a chiyuv mitzvah. But just to accept a chiyuv mitzvah and therefore stop Talmud Torah, that we're not going to accept. And now we're going to have to embark upon the major question here. Well, what is that quota? How many people have to be at a levaya in order for us to say, according to Rav Chanan's formulation, stay home and continue learning, or stay in the base medrash and continue learning? How many people have to be at the katnasas kala? And again, it could very well be that the numbers change over here. We're going to have one set of numbers, you know, for the mess, and another set of numbers for the kala. And the Gemara says the following: Amru Olav al Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi Shayimavatel Talmud Torah Lotzos Ames Lachnosis Kala. Now, why does the Gemara have to bother? Why does the Brice have to bother telling me a story about Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi? Are we going to say that in every Brice, so the Brice is going to open with halachic ruling and then prove that some Jew, some great Amora, actually fulfilled that ruling? But the answer is that what the Gemara wants to point out here is that this is an absolute requirement. It's not that we're giving you a choice. It's not that there's a heter to be mevatel Talmud Torah. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi did it in order to demonstrate that this is what a student of Torah must do. He must stop his learning for the sake of hotzas ames, for the sake of hachnosas kal. And what I told you now, I want to say b'shem Omro, is a chiddush of somebody. But I don't know who the somebody is. He tells you to look in the back, which I don't have the time to do now. But me dvar mamur, when does this rule apply? You got to stop your learning, close the Gemara, and go to the Levaya, go to the Chasm. She'ein imo kol tzarko. That is not enough to fill the quota. That's called kol tzarko, is the quota. Aval yesh imo kol tzarko, ein mevatlin. And Rav Chanan is saying that's the chiddush of this price. Of course, you mevatel Talmud Torah. You mevatel for Talmud Torah for any mitzvah. How much more so for the great mitzvah of hachnasas hames, hotzas hames, or hachnasas hakala? But if this cold sarko, and now you want to go to the chas, the kala, or to the mess because you want to enhance the mitzvah, that's already a quinter b'chanan, ein mevatlin. Now you started with the mitzvah Talmud Torah, you continue with that mitzvah. Now it's very strange. V'kama, the Gemara is going to ask, kama cold sarko. And the Gemara's answer seems to, as we'll try to indicate, single out Levayas Hames. The Gemara never gives us an answer to the question, how many people have to be there for the Achnas Sakal? Let's see if I'm right. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Eini, Mishmei Dera, Tresar Alfei Gavre, Veshisa Alfei Shipure. The Amrile and others say, Tlesar Alfe Gavre Uminayu Shisa Alfe Shipura. Ula Omar, he has a different Shita. Kigon de Chatzie Gavre Meabule Vyad Sichra. We'll go over all these, but I just want to get to the next line. Rav Sheshes, Itamar Rav Yochanan Omar, where are all these numbers coming from? Whatever the various numbers are. Nitilasa kinesinasa. It all goes back to the giving of the Torah, because when we bury the person, then what we're basically saying is we're giving up, we're undoing the Torah, we're terminating the Torah that he was able to study in his lifetime. So what we're doing is, on an individual level, we're reversing the nesinas haTorah. Is manasi nasa b'shishim ribu, af netilasa b'shishim ribo. Again, we're stopping right now in the middle of the sugya because I have a lot to talk about in the previous lines of the Gemara. And then hopefully we'll have time, I don't know where the time flew, to get to the main sugya for tonight. Okay. In any event, let's go back to the first number over here. Rav Shmuel Bar Eini says, Tresar Alfe Gavri, which means 12,000 people, Vishisa Alfe Shipure, and another 6,000 Shofros. Shipure are Shofros. Shofros used to be blown by shofar blowers who would escort the, who would accompany the escort, the entourage of the Levayas HaMes. And they were there to, in a sense, announce, like, you know, today we use a foghorn, you know, and we yell and we scream. In my neighborhood, I know they have these cars that go around with the Ramkol on it, you know, to tell everybody to hurry up and join the Levaya. In those days, they used the shofar. But again, who could hear the shofar? So you needed 6,000 shofar blowers. The Amrile, there's a slightly different girsa, Tlesar Alfe Gavre. Okay, there were 12,000 men, but Minayu, amongst those 12,000, were Shisa Alfe Shipur, 6,000, meaning half of the group, were the shofar blowers. So the Sach HaKol, when you add the shofar blowers, and the rest of the group was 12,000. The first girsa has it that you add the 6,000 shofar blowers to the 12,000 people on foot, and you get 18,000. What is this all about? How do these numbers make any sense? And what do they have to do with Nesinas HaTorah? And then we'll ask the other question, why does the Gemara address the numbers that are necessary for Levayas HaMes, Hotzos HaMes, and not pay any attention to the Achnosa HaSkala that we spoke about before? So first about the numbers. So he has here a footnote in which we base ourselves on a pasuk in Tehillim. Now let's try to read this pasuk in Tehillim carefully. It's in Tehillim Samaches, pasuk Yudches. And it says there the following: Rachav Elokim Ribosayim Alfei Shna'an. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the time of the giving of the Torah, was writing on Ribosayim Alfe Shinon. Okay, so we'll get to figure out what this means. Now, Ribosayim means multiply by two. In other words, the word Ribui Ein Ribui El Shnayim means take Alfe. Alfe means 1,000, in plural 2,000, because you're multiplying 2 times 1,000, and you're left with 2,000. Now, who are these 2,000 that are escorting HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time in the Sinas HaTorah? These are the Malachi HaShoreis. However, the word Shinon, says the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Al Pidrush, Al Tikrei Shinon Ela She'enom, which means that we're going to have to subtract from the Ribosayim Alfe Shinon. So how much is, again, Ribosayim Alfe? What did I tell you? I think I told you the wrong number. I told you 2,000?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That would be Shnayim, Shnei Alfe Shinon. But it says Ribosayim Alfe Shinon. Ribosayim is 10,000 times 2. So 10,000 times 2 would be 20,000, but it says Shinon. Shinon means She'enom v'chasu shnei alofen. So if we take 2,000 away from 20,000, we get 18,000. Hainu, She'nigla HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Sinai, when God revealed Himself at our Sinai, b'shmona esrei elef, with 18,000 malochim. Okay, so we have the number 18,000. And that's fine. But this 18,000 is a is a composite of two different, we can break it down to two different elements. Why? Because the Torah says in the parasha of Nesinas HaTorah, it says, V'chol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos v'yes ha'lapidim v'yes kol ha'shofar. So there are kolos, there are lapidim, and there's kol shofar. What this means is that we break down the group of hosts of Malachim into three different groups. One group, which represents one third, is called Lapidim. The other third is called Kolos. These are all names for Malachim. You have to know the mystical meaning here. And the third group is the Shofar group. So therefore, the shear of Kol Tzarko in Leviyas HaMes is going to be 12,000. But we also need to get up to 18,000. So how do we get up to 18,000? So he says the following. L'chein ashir hu tresar alfi. We need 12,000 plus another 6,000 connected to the third group of Malachim, and those are the people who are blowing the shofar. So according to the first opinion in Rav Shmuel, we have now 18,000 people at the Levaya, right? And we have 12,000 people and 6,000 shofar blowers. And those 6,000 shofar blowers is the shlish of 18,000 that are represented by the shofar at Har Sinai. Then we have the Amrila, the second version, that there are 12,000 and 6 of those 12,000 are blowing the shofar. He says, Ha'amri la sovrim sherabosayim koi al ribu di alma v'kavona l'ribui echod v'od alpayim l'kach rak tresar alfei hu ashir u'mitocham hoya sheish elef l'kol shofar. So according to the Yesh Omrim, meaning the Amri la, the Ribosayim in this very same Pasuk in Tehillim, which says, Rechav Elokim Ribosayim, is Ribui Di Alma, which means that the Pasuk is talking about a large contingency, a large entourage of people, a mass of people. And when it says Alfei Shinon, it means that you add another 2,000. So this ribui echad means 10,000, and then to that 10,000 you add alfei shinon, which is 2,000, and you arrive at the number 12,000. Amongst them, we have to have people who represent the shofar blowers, because the malachim also had a group of shofar blowers. So for that, we need that amongst the 12,000, there should be 6,000 shofar blowers, because we said that there were 6,000 malachi asharis of shofar. In any event, we have Rav Sheshes, he says that the Torah was given to Shishim Ribu, and therefore the number of people at the Levaya is got to be 600,000. So just to summarize the three shitas. We have a fourth sheet in a minute of Ula. So we have now, number one, the sheet of Rav Shmuel in the first version, and that means that we need 18,000, mean 12 and 6. According to the second opinion, we need Sach HaKol 12, and according to the third opinion of Rav Sheshes, we need 600,000. Now again, Rabbi will say, I don't know how you could figure out how many people are out of Levaya. Lately, here in Eretz Yisrael, there have been some really mass Levayas. I was at a Levaya the other day. I mean, I no way of knowing how many people were there, because people came in and people came out. But I think they said that at Rav Shlomo Zalman's Levaya there were masses of people, hundreds of thousands of people. I heard about Yosef Shalom, Rebel Yoshev, that, I don't know, the numbers were incredible because the police couldn't count. There were people who couldn't come anywhere near the entourage. They were filling up all sorts of side streets. But I don't know if it reaches the number 600,000. It's hard to believe that.
Yeah.
There's 600,000
for Avadi?
Yeah. Well, the Spartans have about 2 million.
So I guess that this is really...
There were a lot of people. It was massive.
So then this Gemara is Lamaisa here. There is such a thing. In the middle here, we have Ula. Ula tells us something. I can't tell how many people, but he describes a city called called Abula. And he says that if you would take a wall of people, you know, a single file line of people from the outskirts of Abula all the way to Sichra, which is a cemetery outside the city limits, that would be the required number of people. So you're going through the city, you're cutting through the city with human beings.
No, it depends on the person.
Well, that we're going to get to in a minute. You know, how much Torah he knew, how much Torah he studied, how much Torah he taught. Is that what you mean?
I mean, first of all, Torah, and also what following. I mean, Rav Avadya had a massive following, or Rabbi.
Right, right. But what the Gemara is trying to do is establish the minimum.
The minimum is
now, the maximum might change, maybe for Rav Avadya, but in terms of the minimum, what is the minimum number of people at the Levi is such that at that point it's called Sarko, and it shifts from a Chiv to a Kiyum, if you follow what I mean, and therefore the Nafkamina Gavi Talmud Torah. So then, just 1 minute before I forget, I owe you an answer to the question, why is there no discussion here about the Kal? So Rabbeinu Yonah is quoted here in the Shita Mekubetzes, and he says, "Bigmar Naslu Shir Raklo Tzas HaMes Savalach Nasas Kala." What should we say? So the Gaonim, who came before Rabbeinu Yonah, they were of the opinion that Lachnosis Kala ain't Shir. There is no minimum quota. Just keeps going and going. The more the merrier. But Rabbeinu Yonah himself says that Li'in and Otsos HaKala, we're going from one extreme to the other, who Inyan shall cover Achayim, L'chavav al Baila, V'dayla shemolichin osa l'fi chvoda. Now, how much is the Fifoda? I don't know. Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't really tell us. I mean, I've been at weddings with a very small turnout. In fact, my parents sometimes would, especially for a second marriage, sometimes they would host a wedding in their backyard. You know, usually the Chassid Kala were in their 40s or 50s. And they were looking for a minion to come to the wedding.
That's,
you know,
understandable, but if you have a person getting married for the first time, and people don't pitch up, I think it's very, very bad.
Right, because that's not lefi chvoda. So I would say the following. If you get an invitation to a wedding,
and you know there's not going to be many people there, you should go. Definitely.
I want to even go a step further, Brian. What I wanted to try to say was, how do you know whether your presence is necessary at a wedding? Again, what I'm saying now is Lakshinkugel, but just the saber tozen. If you got an invitation to the wedding, if they took the time to invite you to the wedding, it means that your presence is going to add something to the wedding. That's what I would say is considered less than Kol Tzarko, meaning the Kol Tzarko includes you because they invited you.
How does any of this work out the nicer? Like the Rav Kuberman story that you told, that doesn't seem to fit into this Gemara.
Why is that? Again, if there are enough people at the wedding, whatever that means, l'fi chvoda, then you continue your learning.
How about in terms of levaya? In other words,
wait. So what person are we talking about? You know, we haven't gotten to the key of keys. So we've been saying that you need 12,000 people, you need 80,000, you need 600,000. Who is that person? Is it you and me? Well, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now. Okay, so we're really halfway through.
But there were cases where people, you know, when certain big rabbis get it, they do get that.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to give Aaron, that's been waiting very patiently. You know, and he came from far away. So. Go ahead.
Except for the Kala, if you could,
according to Rabbeinu Yonah, according to the Gaonim, there's no limit.
So that means that anytime you get an invitation, you should do your best to go? That's helpful,
I think that's what Lefi Chvoda means. If the covenant of the Kala is such that she wants you there at the wedding, or her husband wants you there at the wedding, I would think that's Lefi Chvoda.
The story you told is Rav Kuberman didn't go to any weddings of his students.
Sounds like the opposite.
Again, because Rav Kuperman is saying that if there's enough people at the wedding, now what would Rav Kuperman do if it was a very poor turnout and it was not Lefichvoda? No Kala would get insulted if Rav Kuperman didn't show up, because they knew that sending an invitation to Rav Cooper was a matter of formality. You know, the 1,000 women in the institute would send, each one would get married, Baruch Hashem, and send an invitation.
How could Chachila do that? In other words, how could he, as a policy?
Because he's Osek B'Torah. Ella what?
The Gemara is saying otherwise.
But the Gemara is saying only if it's not Lefi Tzarko. Now you're asking me a different question. What happens if there wasn't Lefi Tzarko?
I would say Kvodo is that. In other words, if that was my Rebbe, and that would be the Kavod at my wedding,
they would feel amazing.
They would feel a tremendous Kavod if he's there. I don't want to pick on Rav Kuperman. I don't want to use the name.
Truth is, Aaron, I shouldn't have even told you the story about Rav Kuperman, because I'm sure there are a million different glitches.
No, I'm saying I don't want to use the name Rav Kuperman. I don't want that to go out. But I'm saying Lemaisa, this doesn't seem to work out. In other words, when you have great rabbis that have chosen not to go to weddings, let's not use the word Rav Kuperman. That policy of not going to Talmidim's weddings doesn't seem to work with this Gemara. Because the Gemara says, at the very least, Kvodo, if you're going to take... First, the other sheet that says you have to go without Kvodo. So even if you take the Kvodo position, that's also...
Actually, it says Kvodo, but it's Kvodo. Yeah,
it's also very problematic. In other words, I would want my Rebbe to be there. I knew that I wanted my Rebbe to be there. Everyone wants their rabbi to be there. So that's definitely... If there's any example of Kvodo...
But again, I don't
say that's the prime example.
What I'm trying to explain to you, Aaron, in not so many words, is the following, that if you have 1,000 students, and that was Rav Kuperman's unique situation.
I know, but does the
No, I was in Rav Soloveitchik's year, and he had 100 students, because he didn't have 1,000 students.
Reverse on, does the Gemara give that tour? In other words, if you have a certain amount of students, you don't have to
What I'm suggesting is that the mitzvah, again, we'd have to go through Hilchos Talmud Torah. I wrote extensively on Hilchos Talmud Torah. If you ever want to read it, I'd be very tickled pink. But the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, if it's going to be completely undermined, that's already a different story.
It's 2 hours.
That's not what the Gemara is talking about here. The Gemara is addressing the case.
What do you mean completely undermine?
If he has to go to 1,000 weddings, then there's no Talmud Torah. You're completely undermining the mitzvah of Talmud Torah.
Why do you say it? 2 hours a night is undermining?
Oh, wait. Now you're not being fair. You're picayuning me on a detail. I am telling you the following mitzvahs. You can deny the mitzvahs or not, and we'll stand here for an hour arguing about the reality. The reality is the man has 1,000 chasanas to go to. Forget about Talmud Torah. Now, you want to question the reality. No, he can go 2 hours here and 1 hour here. Let's not fight about that, Aaron.
No,
given the facts on the ground, the facts on the ground is close your Gemara, because every night another student of yours is getting married.
Maybe they'll love for
That's what I'm talking about. That's the reality I'm talking about. That's not the reality the Gemara is discussing. The Gemara is talking about a question on an individual basis. You're learning Torah, and you've got an invitation to the wedding, and now you have to decide how to juggle it. So, we just to reiterate, Rabbi Chanan is understanding of it is that if there's a number of people who form what we call Lefi Tzarko, then you should continue learning. If there's not Lefi Tzarko, you should not continue learning. In the case of a chasana, let's say it's Lefi Chvoda, if you're a Rebbe and you should be there because it's going to enhance the covet of the wedding, then that's exactly what you should do. I just mentioned to you that there is a very unique situation that probably happened once in the entire Jewish history of a man who was faced with reality, and you could argue whether the reality was there or not, but the reality was such that he would have to completely throw in the towel on Talmud Torah. And in that case, the girls understood that we can't expect them to come. Were there exceptions to the rule? Maybe, you know, a special Talmida that had a relationship with him. Maybe she was an orphan and he raised her in his backyard. Different cases and different scenarios that I don't know. You know, but...
Okay. I Rav Baran, was...
From Kvarpinas, you're talking about.
No, he was originally from Kvarpinas. And my daughter lived there. And he had a thing. You have to invite everybody from the class, and you should do your utmost to be there, because a person doesn't want to come to the wedding and find there's 5 people.
Right, right.
You know, it can be very...
I was once at a wedding that was happened, I don't know, nothing's happened, but it coincided with a snowstorm. Exactly. It was an amazing blizzard. I don't remember how many inches of snow fell in Brooklyn, New York. And I myself had, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was a Masada Kedushin. I was worried that I wouldn't make it to the wedding. I wouldn't make it out of the wedding. But Baruch Hashem, we made it. I mean, you know, I bet about a third of the people showed up. And we were able to pull it off. I mean, it was...
You have to dance a lot harder.
Yeah, it's... Okay, Rabosai, they're going to start banging on the door here. So where are we up to here? Oh, so the main question is, who are we talking about? 600,000. Who is this guy who died? So the Gemara says, Hani Mili, this only applies Leman de Kari Vitani. We're talking about a person who's Kari Vitani. Kari means Mikra. And Tani means Torah Sheval Peh Mishnah. He hasn't gotten to the level of being Malamed Talmidim, but he studies both Mikra and Mishnah. And therefore, for such a person, we need 600,000, or the other Shittas are 18,000, whatever they are. Aval Leman de Misnei, if somebody not only studies Torah, but he also teaches Torah, Les Le Shiura. Even 600,000 is not enough. Okay, 600,000 is not enough. Now, what happens to a person who's not Kari and not Tani? So, in such a case, what is the barest minimum? The Gemara doesn't address that question. So, if you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, it says that Laman delo Kari velo Tani. Ein mevatlin im yesh misaskim kidei kvura. If there are enough people there to bury the mess, then that's already considered called sarko. I mean, Rabosai, this really changes a lot of what we've been studying tonight. Maybe you need a minyan because he can't say kaddish without a minyan. Maybe you need a minyan for the shura. But, you know, there's 10 people at the levaya and you're number 11, you don't have to go. But what bothers me is the poskim talk about Laman de lo Kari velo Tani. But there's a middle ground here. What about somebody who's Kari but lo Tani? Meaning he learns Tanakh, but he never learns Gemara. I don't know what his status is. That's a Tzarech Iyun, meaning we have two extremes here. We have the requirement of 600,000 for someone who's Kari v'Tani, he's not teaching Torah. And then we have someone who's lo Kari velo Tani, get a minion and that's all you need. And you go back to your learning because you're number 11. And then we have the third category of Manda Kari Vitani Umisni. Misni means he teaches others. And in that case, the sky's the limit. There is no limit at all. Less Le Shiura. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Yerodea Simon Shin Samach Aleph, I don't know if you don't mind opening the door, so we'll hear when they start. That
they're starting.
Oh, is this? I didn't hear it.
Got a signal.
Okay, great. He says, as far as Bitul Malach is concerned, he says that even for someone who's low Kari velo Tani, you have to give up your work in order to show up. Okay, we'll stop on my...